Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 4th of August, 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's a Tuesday. It's a special edition of the show. This is one of the most wildly speculated human beings on the face of the earth, and we talk to the authority on him. It is really an interesting interview with author of the new book about, you say there's a new book about Matt Drudge? Yeah, I told you about it yesterday. It is really, really a fascinating interview with Matthew Leishtak. He is the author of the new book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a Gift Shop Clerk with an Internet Connection Took Down the Mainstream Media. It's just out, and God, I've ordered a copy. It's just fascinating. If you're at all interested in the history of Matt Drudge, and even if he's driving you nuts now, you can find out why he's driving you nuts now. We get into all that and more, and there's a lot more in the book. So I highly, highly recommend it. It's the whole show today, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, the whole damn show. Normally, the interviews, I try to keep about half the show, but when the topic is interesting and the subject is interesting and the interview subject is interesting, we go long. And we went long today. Threw a Hail Mary, caught it, touchdown, game over. So get ready for that. You're going to like it. But first, of course, I got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Life Change Tea. That's right, Life Change Tea. It's the tea that changed your life. You go to getthetea.com. You choose your flavor. You throw it in a basket. You go to the checkout. You enter promo code Derek at checkout. And you click apply. You get free fast shipping. Now, what kind of tea can change your life? Well, your body's stopped up. Your digestive tract is stopped up with a whole bunch of stuff in there that you don't need. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. It cleans you out. It's a tea that makes you go. Use as directed, and you will find that you are directed to the bathroom on a regular basis. Makes you cleaner on the inside. Then your body can absorb the nutrition from the food that you're eating. You get more energy, more pep in the old step, as they say. Don't forget to enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout to get the free shipping. And you'll thank me for it. Lots of people have been emailing me saying, oh, you know what? I do notice a difference. And boy, howdy, I drank too much one day and I went overboard. Don't do that. Use as directed. Follow the instructions, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so as a little bit of background, as many of you know, I have been lucky enough to meet and befriend some very interesting people in my life. I shouldn't have. I was just some loser dude who barely graduated high school from Michigan. But I ended up in a place, and maybe it was my charming disposition, my ability to drop an F-bomb when appropriate, whatever it is. I've been very fortunate in my career to get to know some people. And this story of the Drudge Report involves some of the people that I was fortunate enough to become friends with. And so it's fascinating to me to hear the story from Matthew Leishtak about the Drudge Revolution, how it came to be. I've never met Drudge. I'll probably never meet Drudge. But I know a lot of people who know Drudge and knew a lot of people who knew Drudge. And so I had a little bit of inside information, and some rumors, some stories were confirmed, some were not, some were shot down. But the story is absolutely amazing how this guy with a website that looks like he was created in a Word document became the most influential person in all of media, was able to, you know, just a guy with a dial-up was able to dominate the mainstream media and change it. Some for the better, some for the worse. So we get into all of that, and then we answer the, or try to answer the billion-dollar question. What in the hell is going on with the Drudge Report? What happened to Matt? You'll get that answer as well. And you'll find all this stuff in the book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a gift shop clerk with an internet connection took down the mainstream media. It's fascinating. If you think, I could never, ever do what this person did. I'm never going to be a success. I'll never do this. I'll never do that. Listen to the story of Matt Drudge. If Matt Drudge can do it, the only thing stopping you from at least having a shot at doing it is you. You'll like the interview. But first, another sponsor. The Trump campaign is a special gift just for you. President Trump really wants you to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you are one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. There you go. Get your hat on. Text that in. All right. Without any further ado, since I don't have any more ado to do, let's get to the Matthew Leshak interview. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday, and as I'm delivering today, we have a special guest for the Tuesday show. It is Matthew Leshak. I think I pronounced that right, even though he just told me. He's the author of the new book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a gift shop clerk with an internet connection took down the mainstream media. Thanks for taking the time, Matthew.
Thank you for having me, Derek, and you nailed my name.
Excellent. I have dyslexia and I'm dumb, so two strikes against me. First of all, I gotta say, I was friends with Andrew Breitbart, and this topic has always interested me. And when Andrew's book came out, he sent me a copy of it a couple weeks before it came out. I read it one night, and like 5-6 o'clock in the morning, I sent him an email. I stayed up all night reading it. Sent him an email saying, congratulations, just finished, love the book. He immediately called me because he'd never slept. And he said, he was just grilling me. What did you think of this? What did you think of that? And the one thing I told him is I said, the one thing I wish there was more of in your book, if they had one complaint, it was that there wasn't more about your relationship with Matt Drudge. And he told me that the little bit that he put in there was all he could put in there, because if he'd put in anything more, Matt would never speak to him again. And that's right. Kind of my impression of Matt, because I know I'm friends with Ann Coulter. She knows him. She doesn't talk about him very much. I have a friend who was a producer on his TV show, and I asked him, if you were down in Miami for a week and you just sent down, we worked together for a year or whatever it was, maybe want to grab lunch, catch up, would you get a response? And his answer was, no, I wouldn't. And it wasn't like there was bad blood. So how did the idea of tackling the Howard Hughes of internet news sites come to you? Was it because of the challenge of that?
I first wanted to write this book about 8 years ago. And I, at the time, was a investigative journalist for the New York Daily News, covering crime all around the country. But I became really quickly apparent to the power of Matt Drudge, because if I got a link, if I had a scoop that got put on Drudge, one time in particular I'm thinking of was Aurora. I'm sorry, am I coming out? Am I fading out?
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
One time in particular, I remember I was covering the Batman shooting in Aurora, Colorado. Do you remember that one? And I got the main page on Drudge linked to me. I got a scoop of how he was doing inside the prison. And I remember my editor sent me this picture of them all like toasting wine glasses, because the traffic generated by a Drudge link was intense. And so I began trying to contact people and reaching out to people, trying to see if I could do this book. And the problem was, at that time, Matt was at the apex of his power. Because of that, nobody would talk to me. I mean, people were very kind about it. They're just like, you know, they were so dependent, though, as journalism was shifting from print to online, and they were so dependent on generating revenue through match aggregation that I had no chance. But a few years later, you know, Matt, frankly, just isn't as powerful as it used to be. Social media took a big chunk out of his readership and his influence. So I was able to, you know, get some real key players to participate, because at the end of the day, what Matt did is historic, and the story needed to be told. And every day that went by, you know, we were losing a little bit of that, I felt. So I took it on, and I got a lot more participation than I expected.
It is very weird, having worked in conservative media. Everybody has a gripe about Drudge. Nobody knows what it, how does he choose one over the how does this work? There's just a blind email. You throw it there. You cross your fingers and you hope for the best. And I can say that I've been above the headline. I have been the headline one time in something I wrote, and I've been in the body a lot. And it really is just a massive, where you are matters. And everybody still wants to be Drudged, and that still has enormous power.
Yeah.
Do you find the conservative outlets in particular who seem more dependent, because Google aggregation is a little different than Drudge aggregation, we're still a little reluctant to talk about on the record or with their name attached to it, the influence of Drudge or their issues with Drudge? Because, you know, if douchebag.net says Drudge is the worst person ever, douchebag.net could run risk of never getting another Drudge hit again.
Yeah, they are, and they were. But I, you know, as I said, I tried to appeal to their sense of history, that eventually, if somebody didn't write this book, he would be whitewashed by academia, you know, because they're not a big fan of him. And I understood the problem that they were dealing with in terms of talking about Matt Drudge would mean, Matt Drudge, you were never going to get a link again. And if you did have a relationship with him, he would never talk to you again. It's just the way he was. Joseph Curl, who was Matt's full-time AM editor in 2009, for 5 years, he went on the record and he explained very succinctly that the first rule of working for Matt Drudge was that you don't talk about Matt Drudge. And it wasn't light. Like, Joseph had to immediately delete all of his social media. And essentially, like you were talking about with Andrew Breitbart's book, he had a fascinating chapter. I don't know if Andrew told you this. He had a great chapter about his time with Matt Drudge. And it was flattering to Matt, talking about what a revolutionary he was. And he sent it to Matt, and just to get the okay. And Matt got back to him and said, absolutely not. You cannot put any of this in the book. And, you know, Andrew was really upset. He was like, you know, I have to pretend like this decade plus of my life just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But he did, because at that time, Andrew was still dependent on Matt.
Yes. Well, a lot of people at that time, while Andrew was alive, were still dependent on Matt. But why is it that Matt is so secretive? Is he, you know, running cocaine for the cartels? Is he a CIA agent? I get that you don't maybe want your every move to be covered by the media, especially when they definitely have it out for you. But he doesn't want anything about him. That Joe Curl is, you know, verboten and persona non grata because he talked about 5 years of his life seems insane to most people.
It is. And I, you know, with the book, I really try to take a non-political view. I just try to really, really tell the story. And so I try not to conjecture much on his intentions, but I'll tell you a story real quick about Matt's paranoia, because that's evident by, you know, just looking at his behaviors. So back in 2007, I believe it was, Barry Weiss wrote an article for New York Magazine, and it was overall flattering about Matt. But he did mention a few tiny personal details about Matt's life, not many. The very next day, Matt went on the radio, and he loved his radio show of 10 years, WABC, and it was a fantastic show in my opinion, and announced that he was ending his show. He met with a friend of his at a bar and said that he's totally, he got rattled by it, and he's going dark. His words were, he thinks the website will be a lot more powerful without his face to it. But the friend noticed that he kept talking over and over again about this article, and it rattled him. So it's
what
real.
Was it, like, in the article that was so personal?
It really wasn't too much. It just mentioned a few things about his family life, which was, to me, we live in a society today where that's a currency. The fact that you, like, Matt grew up from nothing. His family was remarkably dysfunctional. His dad disowned him, like, literally just said, I'm done. And his mom suffered from severe mental illness, which was diagnosed by at least one doctor as schizophrenia. So that was Matt's upbringing. Barely had any education. I think he finished 355th out of 365 students in his high school graduating class. So he really pulled himself out of nothing. And a few of these, the education was mentioned, which he mentioned himself in his book, but the family life. There was one paragraph about his mom's sickness. And
he goes on, he graduates high school. Didn't he work as a clerk in a gift shop at 30 Rock or something like that? And then his website because he'd find discarded ratings or something. Tell us the story of how the Drudge Report was not what it is now.
No, right. So people make this mistake of looking at Matt through a political lens, and Matt does have his own political ideas, but the reality is Matt isn't a political, he's just not that guy. Like he began working on jobs, first at McDonald's, then selling as a telemarketer for Time Life Books. Finally, he decided to move to Hollywood, where he got a really crappy apartment and was walking down Sunset Boulevard one day and stopped into the newspaper shop and saw an ad in Variety for The Price is Right. Okay, so his job at The Price is Right was to move the sets around real quick in between the commercial breaks. And he became very good at that. So they promoted him to the CBS gift shop. And then from the CBS gift shop, he became a manager there. But when he was there, he always loved news. And this was an obsession with him. And his friends would describe his obsessive nature. He carried these little notebooks all around. And he'd walk into newsstands and just write little interesting, you know, tips to himself about what all these newspapers were saying. But he learned that the Nielsen ratings were being thrown into the trash a day before they were released to the public. And he figured out the custodial staff schedule and learned that there was a small window of time in between when the Nielsen ratings were thrown into the trash and a custodial department was able to take the trash out. And he would go in, swoop in, and then post these Nielsen ratings online. And that was when there was no Drudge Report. It was simply some dude on his computer who called himself Matt from Hollywood, posting on these very early internet websites. And from there, he not only met Andrew Breitbart, which changed, like, really, they, you know, I don't think Andrew gets enough credit for how he helped Matt. But from there, he began getting sources and then snooping more around CBS. He learned from finding memos that Jerry Seinfeld was demanding 500,000 hours an episode. He learned that Connie Chun was fired before Connie Chun learned that she was fired. And he posted this online. Or, you know, that Sybil Shepherd refused to work with a certain group of people. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know how it works. You've been in this game. Like, the more good, legit stories you get, suddenly people begin trusting you as a source. And it began to snowball.
And he when does the actual Drudge, when does he go from Matt in Hollywood to I should do a website because there might be money here?
So do you remember when I think you're quite a bit younger than me. You used to get these CDs in the mail from AOL. They used to be in everybody's mailbox. Do you remember?
I remember
those.
900 minutes free or whatever it was.
Yeah. They came with like this free archaic tool to build a website. And as Matt began posting his news, somebody at some point asked them, they sent him a message and said, hey, how do I subscribe to your newsletter? Well, at the time, Matt didn't have a newsletter, but he just decided to start one right there. And he used a really generic free software you got from those discs and just put something up real quick. And that was the birth of the Drudge Report. Until then, it was a newsletter that was sent to people. And that's how Andrew Breitbart found him.
It's still basically that design, which is amazing. His budget does not go into design or website maintenance at all. But I imagine that led to a cult following that stoked his ego, but it probably didn't lift him out of his crappy apartment in Hollywood. Then, of course, he gets put on not only the map, but the globe, everybody's map, with the story of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. Do you have any idea how that came about? Maybe not the source that leaked it to him, but
I actually was able to get the source. I do have the source. It's in my book, and I'll tell your audience. I'd be happy to, because nobody ever knew how it actually went down before. But Lucianne Goldberg was really getting pissed off. Hope I can use that word on your podcast.
You can say whatever the fuck.
Nice. All right. Thanks. Lucianne Goldberg was getting extremely pissed off because Isikoff of Newsweek, who was extremely helpful with this book too, he wasn't getting the green light to post this story. They had, you know, there was this group of people who were convinced and generally right that Bill Clinton was doing some very corrupt things. And they kept trying to get it out into mainstream media. At that time, we didn't have the conservative media did not have a lot. They had ABC, NBC, CBS, a few newspapers. That was all the information. So the conservative media had Rush and not much else. And Lucianne Goldberg didn't know Matt very well, just knew he was some Hollywood guy because that was his reputation. He was reporting Hollywood gossip. And Ann Coulter was friends with Matt at the time, kept being like, Lucianne, you got to, like, you know, Newsweek's not going to print this story. It's going to be Clinton's going to get away with this again. You need to go to Matt Drudge. So she, you know, one of the most, this, and I've been a reporter a lot of my life. There's no shame in saying that some of the best stories you get that people think you've worked really hard on, you just simply answered a phone. And that's what Matt did. Lucianne Goldberg called Matt Drudge up and she said, boy, do I have a story for you. Hand fed him everything. She told me 1 hour later, the story was up. And then 3 hours later, according to the Star Report, at 1600, you know, in the White House, Bill Clinton was on it and he knew his administration was suddenly on fire. And I look at that moment, not as just this moment that brought apart a scandal. I look at that as this really historic moment of this day when that this demarcation line of everything before and after, because before, editors controlled what the public got information on. Editors, gatekeepers of information, decided, like with JFK and his affairs and Reagan and some of the things that the media would often decide that we would not have access to that information. The day Matt Drudge clicked enter and sent that story, it was done. There is no more holding this story. Everything gets out. And that's why in telling the story of Matt, I was also able to tell this much wider story about this huge revolution in populist revolution in the news industry that I think without of which somebody like Donald Trump could never have been elected.
No, I don't think there is. And Matt Drudge then gave us a peek at what was on the cutting room floor in all of those newsrooms and all of those editing bays. And since then it's grown. It's in many ways outgrown Matt. I want to get to that. Yeah. In a second, but I want to go back to this because is it that he broke that story and so then everybody said, well, shit, if I'm going to break, I can go to Drudge. He'll run it if I'm getting any resistance or if I can't quite dot all the I's and cross all the T's, I'll let Matt float it out there and that'll give my editors reason to give me more resources or more time or whatever. Was he used by the media as much as he was using the media?
Oh, of course. But I, you know, one of the reasons, and I'm sure we'll touch base on this at some point, is why conservatives feel so betrayed by Matt is because in the beginning, he was their only game. Like you couldn't get
space. We'll build to that. But
yeah, we couldn't get space in the mainstream media. as conservatives. And when Matt Drudge came along, he served as this great equalizer because they couldn't control the internet. They tried, they're still trying, they're getting much better at it, frankly, but they couldn't control him. And because of that, he fostered this huge connection with the conservative movement as somebody who they could go to. I mean, I remember I went through all these over 200 interviews in this book, and a lot of people just telling me, like, you know, I had this situation happen and I had nobody. I could go to Matt Drudge. He would post it. And then if he posted it, the media began to spread it. And that can't be understated.
How long did that take? Because there had to have been some resistance. But really, there was probably a 20-year period, 15 for sure, where it was the New York Times could drive the news coverage on a national stage, but so could Drudge. It's less so now, but there certainly was that time where they were on equal footing.
I think it happened pretty immediate. So if you go back to him breaking the Clinton story, on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, George Will brings it up, mentions the Drudge Report. George Stephanopoulos cuts him off as though he cursed on live TV. Oh, we can't mention that. Don't talk about that. But the fact that Matt turned out to be right, and then was unapologetically so, he became this cult following, and people looked for reasons to, especially when Fox News and talk radio began exploding all at the same time. Matt, I felt like, was the godfather of it all.
He wasn't always a recluse, though, because he did take a right. Fox TV show. He was out there. He was never really, really out there, but he wasn't a hermit. He was seen enough to know that people didn't think he was deliberately trying to be unseen. If he was always this way and very, very private, why would he agree to do a TV show, do you think?
I think he was always private, but he changed around 2007, and it was a conscious effort. Everything with Matt is extremely tactical. That's one thing that my research has shown. He doesn't just on a whim make decisions for his website. His website, he thinks very hard about these decisions. And at 2007, I believe you can pinpoint it to that Barry Weiss article. I think it rattled him. He did not want to be the story. But before that, he was toying around town with David Brock and Laura Ingraham were, you know, very good friends with him. And they were known as the three amigos, they were called by people in the conservative circles. They would show up at parties. They were a good time. Matt was a prolific dancer at nightclubs. And it changed. He changed. He began also feeling like people were using him. He kept talking about psychic vampires and how these people would suck his energy. You could never give him enough. They were always taking. And I don't get into psychoanalyzing anybody in this book because I don't know. Matt didn't cooperate.
Right.
But what I can do is tell the story.
It's dangerous to do that anyway. Is it? Yeah. Is he uncomfortable with his success? Is it, I just want the money, I don't want the attention? Is it, I don't understand. Like, he had to know, he named it after himself. He made himself the other editors were not, they're known, but nobody acknowledges it publicly. It's Matt Drudge, everything up there. At some point there was that shift, and I guess it was that 2007 article where but his name was still up there. I guess you can't take that off. I'm trying to understand the guy, and I have a million questions that I've asked all the people I know who know him that they do their best to answer. Okay, let me ask you this then, Matthew.
Sure.
You talk to a bunch of people who know him. You talk to a bunch of people who were his friends or are his friends. Are they still his friends?
No, very rarely. Ann Coulter, I've heard their relationship. Ann is yeah, hot and cold. But I went through this list. It was really sad, actually. So do you know? Do you ever have the situation where, like, you're in high school and you're friends with these people, and then all of a sudden one of the people just stopped talking to you and you assume you've done something wrong? But then you talk to your other friends and they're like, oh, no, he cut me off, too. Like, and then it kind of comes clear that that this person just stopped talking to everybody. So that was a reaction I had a lot of time. I'd talk to somebody and they'd explain to me how they feel like they must have offended Matt and done something wrong. And then I'd say, well, he's actually not talking to any of these, you know, 80 people that you've mentioned either now. Like, he's cut them all off. I've talked to them. And there's always this moment of, oh, it's not me. He changed.
It's got to be a pretty – does he have friends? Current friends? Or did you find people where they're like, I'm not going to talk to you. He's my friend now. I'm going to dinner with him. I'm not going to talk to you.
There's one man in Florida who I think he's close to, who he's close to right now. And so I think there's at least one person. But I don't think in high school, I went back and talked to his high school friends. And he had one very close friend named Michelle who was kind enough to cooperate. And she said Matt just didn't, like, so you know how a lot of people act like they don't care? She said Matt legitimately didn't care. Like, she really didn't. Like, people made fun of him. They made fun of his sexuality, his voice. She said Matt was unfazed. And part of me thinks it's sort of that. So also, like, Derek, like, you get offered to do TV stuff a lot, right? And yeah. Like, you realize a lot of it is, it's like you don't get paid. You're driving 30 minutes and you sit and do makeup and then you're on for 6 minutes. You can barely talk half the time. But you know that there's those people who live for that stuff. Yes. And then there's the people who just don't, like, they don't care. Matt is on the side of not caring. I don't know if that helps you like understand it all. He just doesn't care that much.
It does, because it shows a bit of a disconnect. It's not that he doesn't care about people, but it's like, well, I don't need them. I'll have them around unless they prove themselves. And then I'll just get rid of them and get new people. Now, I've got to ask you, you referenced it there. One of the rumors, there are a lot of rumors and over the years, and that's part of, that goes hand in hand with being mysterious or aloof or whatever you want to describe it as, is people tend to fill in the blanks. And I've heard a lot of rumors about Matt. Many I won't go into because even though they were trusted people, they're wild and outrageous. But one that always sort of dogged him, and I don't even know that it's dogging anymore, is that he's gay. Is he gay?
Yeah. And, you know, just keep in mind that Matt grew up in a time when homosexuality wasn't looked at as it is now. And his parents... Right. His parents were not extremely happy about that fact.
His father disowned him because of that. Would have been my guess when you referenced that.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't pin down exactly why his father disowned him, but I was also able to have access to a lot of court papers, court documents. And one of the things is that Matt was put into, had a lot of psychiatric care as a kid, as a teenager. So, you know, I write about it matter-of-factly because it, you know, it's part of who Matt is, and it's come up over and over again with him and him reacting to it. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true, and I don't know if he even is really denying it now. I mean, I spoke to people who, and I've seen his high school friends shared notes with me.
So, okay. So I don't think it's a scandal. There was a time, I suppose, maybe 20 years ago when if they said, well, he's gay, that maybe that would have damaged him. But that day is long since gone. And I don't begrudge anybody what they do in their personal lives, as long as what they do it with is of age and willing. Yeah. But it's just bizarre that so little is, and it's just, people will fill in the blanks. Why does he emerge from time to time, do you suspect? Like in 2016, when he showed up, you talk about how the closeness of the Trump administration, at least at the beginning in the Trump campaign, was that why he was at that Vegas debate with Ann Coulter, or was that just a lark, do you think? Why would he, this guy, it's like it was like a Howard Hughes sighting, like, oh my God, is that Ann Coulter and Matt Drudge sitting in the audience?
Yeah, I think Matt just really wanted to go and was hoping he wouldn't be noticed. To reporters who confronted Matt when he was there and went up to him. And
you're walking with a 6 foot blonde, you're going to be noticed. It's just, and yeah, especially and when that 6 foot blonde is Ann Coulter.
I know, you're right. But he wouldn't participate. He wouldn't give any comment to the media. He wouldn't talk to anybody, but he looked at Trump as a phenomenon, an American phenomenon and just couldn't resist being a part of it.
Well, he was describe how big of a part he was of it. I mean, we saw the Drudge Report in 2016. It was definitely favorable to the president, but you've uncovered proof that it was more than just that.
Oh gosh, listen. I was able to get access to emails from Matt Drudge to the Trump campaign, and the coordination was absolutely astounding. The way it would work was fascinating, too. It gave an insight onto how quickly Drudge can get something into the ether. So somebody from the Trump campaign will get an email from somebody that had a picture, for instance, of a sign at a road sign saying, "Don't let the rapists in." It would be sent to Matt Drudge. Matt Drudge would post it. It would be then on 100 different sites around the web within 8 to 9 minutes. Matt was invited to the debates. He was at the White House at least 2 times and out to dinner with the president after he was elected once. On the night of the election, when all the early polling came out showing a landslide for Hillary, Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner are outside. And, you know, Jared's like, "Oh, man, this is terrible. How do we tell the president?" And Bannon calls up Matt, and Matt says, "You fucking morons. The mainstream media has been wrong about all of this. They're going to be wrong about this, too. Trump's going to win, and he's even going to win Pennsylvania." And this got back to Trump, and Trump was like, "Well, we'll see how smart he really is." And he earned a lot of, you know, that's why he was at the White House afterwards. And I think every campaign since the late 90s has had to have somebody on staff known as a Drudge Whisperer. And that's somebody who can make a connection with Matt, hopefully even influence his website. And I think that the Trump campaign was very intelligent to use Kushner because he had history in newspapers with the Observer and totally understood how powerful Matt was in driving the GOP electorate. And I mean, to just put an exclamation on that point, Ted Cruz, when interviewed, has been asked about, you know, the primary situation. And he said that the fundamental reason that basically they lost the primary, that the Cruz team lost, was because of Matt Drudge and the coverage of Donald Trump. He traces it back to that as the defining moment that led Trump to even be in the general election. So it was, not a small part of the campaign.
You mentioned the Drudge Whisperer on campaigns, which goes back to the complaint of the social vampires. So there's this love-hate relationship with his own position, it seems, because you have to sort of kiss the ring, but he also seems to think, "Oh, people only want to talk to me because they're kissing the ring because they have to." Am I reading too much into that?
I don't think so. Matt has some vanity about him, too. There's a scene where he's telling a friend of his about a time when there's this movie, a George Clooney movie is being made. And Clooney wants in the movie, like a screen in the background to say the Drudge Report, you know, somebody's on it. And Matt won't even answer their calls. It's getting annoyed, like won't do it. So finally, the studio has George Clooney himself call Matt. And Matt relays the story where he's saying, "No, George Clooney, has anybody ever said no to you? No, 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 no," and hangs up on him. And the fact that he enjoyed telling that story, like we all would, of course, but he really relished telling that story to friends, made me think there's a bit of vanity. There's a well-deserved in many respects, but it's definitely there.
Let me ask you this. One of the things that people in conservative media most admire about the Drudge Report, and it's something that every conservative and I think liberal website to a different degree tries to strive for, is the headline writing. You know, the gold standard for fun, perfect, on-the-nose headlines is the New York Post, for example. But for being able to read a 2,000-word New York Times screed and finding in paragraph 27 a different nugget that's kind of buried, not the focus, and to formulate that into a headline that you put in the link on the Drudge Report. That's something Andrew Breitbart tried to teach me, to not very good success, but his website certainly did. Did Breitbart Andrew do that? Did Matt do that? How did that come to be? Could there be one without the other too? Are they both just necessary ingredients?
I think they were both necessary ingredients, as was the internet. So you had this perfect storm. And there's a scene in my book that I just love, and it's after emails Matt Drudge, before Matt even sets up the Drudge Report, because he sees Matt posting all these different things on all these different early internet websites. And Matt agrees to meet him, and they meet at Orson Bean's house, which is Andrew Breitbart's future father-in-law in Los Angeles, in I forget what area of Los Angeles, but in Venice Canals, I think it's called. And, they show up there and they talk for hours about how the media is, 96% liberal, but 80% of the populace views themselves as to the right, and how there's this place and the internet. And I think about like the excitement that must have been in the air, and they were trying to really build something. And they saw, and I think Matt at that moment saw so much of the future that he laid out later in that speech to the Washington Press Corps, which if your audience hasn't heard, it should go back and listen to it. The Matt Drudge Washington Press Corps speech. It's so prophetic to today and applicable to today. But, they formed a team for a long time. And I think Matt Drudge was a real American original in the aspect of I can't tell you how many editors I've had in my life. Nobody could pick out a story like Matt could, like end headline writing. And then I think Andrew, one of the things that Matt liked about him was how quickly his mind worked. Like Andrew couldn't sit still ever, and he couldn't, but his mind worked really, really fast. So he was able, when you're in the Drudge Report and you're getting 8,000 emails a minute, his mind was able to like do some beautiful mind Russell Crowe action and just see everything quickly and be able to post. Which at the time, remember, that was Matt's big thing. That's why our editors were constantly refreshing the Drudge Report, because Matt was first. The Drudge Report was first at everything. So if you weren't going on the Drudge Report because you liked Matt Drudge a lot of times, my editors in New York couldn't beat it more left than anybody, but they didn't want to miss anything. And now those days are over because Twitter's first. It's not even close.
It's not even close. Sometimes you go to the Drudge Report and it's like hours later and things aren't still up there. And is it Matt doesn't care? Is it personnel choices? Is it that he knows that Twitter's already beat him, so he's only going to wait for things that come to him rather than try and follow the trends? Do you have any guess at that?
I would say go back to that interview we gave with Alex Jones, and you can hear him talking about social media and how disgusted he is by it. And how he's also talked about, he realizes his time's coming to an end. Like you can hear the voice of resignation in him, I think. And, talking about how he started and the internet was this wide open place where you created your own realities. And now you live in these corporate, as he described, corporate ghettos of Google, of Facebook, of Twitter, of the socials. And he thinks that, the way he looks at it is like it's the end of an era. But he always looked at that as inevitable. Radio comes along and replaces the genre before it, then TV replaces radio. And the system keeps moving forward. All we can hope is that it's moving forward in a positive direction.
And then we come to what people have noticed in the last, I'd say, year and a half, is that love affair with the Trump administration, that closeness with it is, I don't know if it's gone. I don't know what is going on there, but there's definitely been a decided tone shift in the aggregation choices of the Drudge Report, since they don't really do that much reporting. Is there a particular event that caused that, or is it just wear down over time, or is it he's just going to go where the money is?
History with Matt has shown us that he's not like this idea of Matt as a conservative. It's just completely false. I'll tell your audience a quick story. When Andrew Breitbart was working for Matt in 2008, he would begin posting these stories about Reverend Wright. Do you remember those Reverend Wright stories that were everywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And and Matt, from whatever remote location he was at, would go online and take those stories off and replace them with something more favorable to Obama. And this continuously kept happening with Andrew. And Andrew, unlike Matt, was a total true believer in his cause. Like, he had a philosophy. He believed it through and through. And anybody who spoke to Andrew for more than 2 minutes, like, you obviously, you know that. Nothing fraudulent about him. And finally, he didn't call Matt because you couldn't call Matt Drudge. Like, I think Andrew spoke to Matt a handful of times after that meeting at his future father-in-law's house. So he IM'd Matt and he said, look, what's going on? Why do you keep taking these stories down? And Matt's response was very telling. He said, an Obama presidency might be terrible for the country, but it would be great for my website. And you know, it's so, you know, people want to know, and look, was he wrong? I can't find more than a handful of people who did better financially than Matt Drudge in 8 years under Obama. His net worth is estimated at north of $100 million. So all these people are like, whoa, what's going on with Matt Drudge? Why is he shifting? Well, Matt is making a business decision. Whether that decision is true or not, I have no idea, but I mean, whether it's going to pan out, like, but it's definitely a business decision.
You make reference to a pay-to-play scheme with Drudge Report and Breitbart. One of the things I asked Andrew about during one of our late-night drinking sessions was, again, I noticed that Andrew, obviously, back when Breitbart was just a wire service aggregation website. People forget that, but it was all, it just had every wire service.
He would
link to a Breitbart AP story or AFP story or Reuters story or whatever it was. And then a little while later, that link would be changed. And Andrew told me that Matt would go in and change it. And like, okay, well, it's an Associated Press story. It's the same Associated Press story. It just is in the Washington Post or some local news somewhere else. He would take it off of Breitbart and put it down. And he didn't really have a good explanation as to why Matt would do that, because Matt only answers to Matt and Matt would tell anybody. Why is that something you found elsewhere? Because you can tell kind of when you know who the editors are, like suddenly this news organization starts getting a few more links than they otherwise would necessarily warrant. But is that common where Matt would say, yes, Andrew is my friend or employee or whatever, but fuck him. I'm not going to help him any more than my sending him a check.
So Matt found himself in a strange position because he began to get very, how do I put it, upset with Matt. I mean, upset with Andrew. He did not, Andrew had a deal with Reuters and where he would put Reuters links into the Drudge Report, and there's a little code embedded and he would get a kickback for each link. Now, Andrew told friends, look, I'm not actually changing any stories. These are the same stories I would be using. I'm just using Reuters instead of somebody else. And the other thing was, early on, before the Drudge Report became big, Matt offered Andrew an ownership stake of 25%, I believe it was. And Andrew at the time was working at E! And was like, I can't, you know, give up my full-time job for a website I didn't know. But after that, and even when the website was generating a fortune, Andrew was getting paid sometimes a check for $2,000 for the month would come in the mail. That would be it. There was no contract. Nothing was signed. And, you know, so Andrew loved being at the Drudge Report because of the influence he got as somebody who was an editor of the Drudge. It's this gateway into all this aggregation. But Matt started getting really fed up with him, but also couldn't find somebody who could do what Andrew did. So they had a really odd relationship the last few years until Matt picked up Joseph Curl and Andrew went his own way.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But then since then, he's kind of burned through a lot of employees. And how many of the former employees were willing to talk to you?
So Curl, there's only it's such a small group, and you know, obviously Andrew isn't unfortunately around to talk. So it's a really small group. Joseph Curl, there's a lot of people who spoke to me off the record and helped. And I can't, you know, so I don't want to, I can't play the 20 questions things where I think your audience would figure it out. It'd be a violation, but Curl was the only one to go on the record with me. And he, one of the most interesting things he told me was that the first day he got behind a realm of the Drudge Report, Matt told him, he said, look, we're not about riding waves. We create them. So what we do is we find the story, we post it. Rush Limbaugh leads it at his A block at noon Eastern. And then the White House press corps is asking the spokespeople about it. And then it begins cycling through the rest of the world. But by then we're off of it onto the next story. That's how the Drudge Report works.
Is his, is he concerned, do you think? Is his influence waning now that he's not a conservative, but his audience is. And there has to be, I know his track. And there's always been controversy about whether that's accurate, if that's a made up number or whatever. But there certainly, as far as influence, if not traffic, it's waning. Do you suspect that bothers him, or is it more about, hell, I got enough money, I don't need this shit, I can quit anytime I want?
I think, based on, you know, a lot of the interviews I did, especially people who knew him when he was younger, that Matt is a chip on a shoulder guy. You know, we all know people like that who just, he came from such a bad situation. I think he has that chip that always pushes him to try to stay relevant. And I don't think he's ever lost that. But look, it's, editors would tell me when a Drudge Report would link to their stories, it would crash their websites. Now, it's like one of their most read stories. You know, it's still good, but it's not what it used to be. And I think Matt, you know, likes being a power player, but he's taking such an interesting risk here, because if he continues his coverage the way he's been running it on in terms of Trump, and Trump wins re-election, Matt's reputation as this political kingmaker is gone, and he'll never get it back.
Is he... There were rumors, and I've written a couple of columns on Matt Drudge, wondering what the hell's going on with the Drudge Report.
I've
and
read
I
all
always
your columns
get these
on Matt Drudge.
Emails
You're all
that
excellent.
Thank you. There's a bit of conspiracy to them, but then with Matt, since you don't know, you never know. Did he sell the website? Is there that possibility and just didn't tell anybody? Because I get those emails all the time that here's a link to something that shows that he was selling the website.
What I'll do is, because I obviously don't have a definitive answer, but I'm going to give you two quick anecdotes. One of them is Matt Drudge showing up at Andrew Breitbart's funeral, and Steve Bannon and him spoke, and Matt asked Steve, you know, with Andrew gone, this was right before Andrew was going to launch. All, you know, he was really launching right then. All these different new, you know,
it was a week before the redesign. Yeah.
And Matt asked what was happening with it. And Andrew and Bannon told him it's full speed ahead. And Matt looked at him and goes, when I'm done, no one else is running my website. Like, it's my website will be over. And the other story is a few years ago, a very high profile NBA basketball owner who your audience would know, but I'm not at liberty to be able to say who it is, offered Matt a disgustingly obscene amount of money for his website. And Matt turned him down and said the reason was he just couldn't imagine somebody running his website with his name on it. So I hear all these stories.
If it didn't have his name on it, he probably would have sold.
Okay, I mean,
so you think it's impossible that he would have sold?
Unless he's changed dramatically. I've been in media long enough to know that nothing's impossible, but I think these rumors are fueled by people who stigmatize Matt as an ideologue. So they're looking at the change in website. But I mean, if Andrew was around, he would be the first to say, look, like, I mean, I have the messages that went back and forth, some of them. And Andrew was very concerned that Matt was trying to actively elect then Senator Barack Obama. So this isn't out of his wheelhouse. Like, this is totally within Matt's nature to report this way. If he thinks it's going to be financially
viable. Is there anybody Matt reveres? Is it like a Rush Limbaugh? Was it a Roger Ailes? Was there anybody that you looked up to?
Rush Limbaugh, he listened to Rush on talk radio a lot as a kid, as a teenager, rather. And Walter Winchell, Matt was a throwback, so he liked to look back to the gossip columnists of different eras. Aside from that, I mean, Matt was really just an original.
But like, as liked far Reagan, as like,
but he also liked Carter. So in terms of inspiration, Winchell, Walter Winchell is. You know, the hat.
Yeah, that hat. That hat is a throwback. That's one way to put it. So let me tell you, let me ask you this, Matthew, as we get close to the end. When you start writing a book and you're trying to write a book about somebody who's living, but you know from the outset, you're not going to be able to talk to them. Did you ever hear from Matt? Did you ever even hear a rejection, or was it just screaming into the Grand Canyon?
No, but there's an irony to my familial situation. I have a 13-year-old daughter who runs a newspaper, and Matt has given her shitloads of press and links. And, you know, like, I'm convinced that they might have emailed back and forth, and, you know, she really doesn't like talking to me about that stuff. But, you know, absolutely no response. I went to a house in Florida. I went to his house in Arizona. Certified letters, countless emails. I even had a friend deliver a package, but nothing. So, but going into it, at the end of the day, Derek, like, I think I was driven by the same thing that drives you to even have me on this your podcast. It's like, I did it for myself. I wanted to know how Matt did this. Like, what? It was such a mystery for me for so long, and kind of inspirational too. I needed to know more. Like, how did this all happen? And, you know, I feel satisfied that I got the answer.
Well, that leads me to my last question. Do you have an idea when you're going in of the story? You've done some research, you've done some talking to people, not to the level maybe that you do for the book, but you've at least started the process, and you have these preconceived notions, this idea. What was the biggest idea you had that got blown all to hell once you started doing the work? And you're like, oh my God, I was way wrong.
It's great. That's a great question. It was that Matt was a conservative. I had no idea that he's not, and it's not like he describes himself as a libertarian, but you know, libertarians, but they're all over the place. Like, yeah. When somebody tells you they're a libertarian, it could mean 80 different things. Mm-hmm. When somebody tells me they're a conservative, I can kind of know where they are. Same with being a liberal, but a libertarian, I mean, it's a huge tent. So Matt just isn't, he's not, I had this vision going into this book of Matt as this conservative kingmaker, and kingmaker he was, but as far as conservatism, absolutely not.
Would you want to be, aside from the fascination and the novelty having worn off, would you want to be friends with Matt Drudge, knowing what you know about Matt Drudge?
Are you kidding me? Of course. I would love to pick his brain and just hear the stories about his early days.
Beyond the morbid curiosity, though, but as a person. The stories.
Sounds kind of like an asshole.
It's a random... Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like a random Wednesday, and you're like, hey, Matt, you want a dinner?
He wasn't good to the people who really, really loved him. And that's the thing that came back a lot. I mean, I remember David Horowitz telling me this story about how when Matt had his lawsuit with Sidney Blumenthal, how, you know, Matt was not a big guy at the time, but they represented Matt and paid for all the legal costs to fight the White House, which was waging war to end internet news, essentially. And Matt was at the middle of that. And, you know, Horowitz was just like, it really hurts my feelings. I don't know what I did. He just stopped talking to me. And, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, loyalty. So on a personal note, I don't know if I would want Matt Drudge as a friend, just maybe as a really fun dinner would be great, though.
Were you surprised that he went to Andrew's funeral?
Not as surprised as everybody else who was there.
They sent out the super secret invite, and I was invited, but I was doing auditions for a radio show. No, my wife went, but I couldn't go because I was like on day two of a 3-day tryout for a radio show. And so I couldn't get away. But learning that Matt was there and I could have met Adam Baldwin, I ended up becoming friends with him later, but I was like, shit, I wish I could have gone, but it was for the wrong reasons. I wish I could have gone for Andrew, but it sounds douchey to say, man, I wish I could have gone to that funeral because I could have met Matt Drudge. But no, my wife said that he was there.
He came late with Ann Coulter, and he left early, and he was supposed to speak, and he wouldn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he was apparently very upset.
I mean,
I believe that. Just even if he's not sentimental, the guy did help him immeasurably. Yeah. Even if they'd had a less than fun last few years.
I mean, I'm sure he did. It's interesting how he called up friends right before the funeral and was over and over again, I can't go. I can't do this. So it did affect him hard. But he didn't show up long, but he showed up. But him and Andrew went a decade without talking at one point.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's a lot of,
like,
I can go a decade.
It's not a good, I don't think
he was
a great friend.
Went to high school. No, there's no doubt about that. And it's a fascinating story. I recommend the book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a Gift Shop Clerk with an Internet Connection Took Down the Mainstream Media. Congratulations on the book and at least cracking the eggshell a little bit of this, you know, hard nut to crack, if I can mix my metaphors there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on.
Matthew Lysiak, it's Lysiak, but search The Drudge Revolution on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and the book will come up. Have a great day and thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. You too.
Thanks to Matthew Lysiak. It's always good to go down memory lane, even if it's fuzzy memory lane and it's not necessarily your memory lane. It's just nice to travel down a lane. It's nice to be able to remember. Again, I recommend the book. The stories that I've heard, and I know what's more in the book, are very interesting. And there's a lot in the book that I don't even know about yet. When my copy shows up, I'll learn. But I highly recommend it if you're at all interested in this, if you're an enterprising person, you want to know how. I'm always fascinated on how somebody became a success. Why that person over the other people? And you got to learn about the people. Not about the business decisions that they made. It's something in the people that make the difference. And this book promises to be a very interesting read. So check it out. Finally, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. Yeah, that's right. President wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. How cool would that be? He wants to make sure that one of the lucky winners is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, like now, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. That's right. You made the cut. All you got to do now, it's up to you, is text Derek to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek. Text those five letters in that order to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. I also want to give two shout-outs to patrons at the $25 level. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Billy, and thank you, Heather. I don't believe this Heather is my wife. I don't think my wife listens to my podcast, so there's no threat of that. And if she's given me $25, she could just give me $25. But I want to thank you guys. You get the shout out level and you get all the swearing and everything else and all the other good stuff that comes with filling your soul with sweetness and light that is this show every day. And then the darkness that comes on Saturday. The website again is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. You guys rock. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the interview. Check out the book, like I said. We'll be back with another episode of the program, probably unless something massive drops in my lap, probably return to regular format of me ranting for an hour tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday. We're already on Wednesday soon, tomorrow. So the week is flying by. Thanks. See you then.